The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
I came to tell you this year is your last.
What?
I will not be marginalized by the iron fist of white privilege that pervades this work environment.
I am not trying to silence your strong female Indian woman of color spirit. Hashtag me too, trans is beautiful, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, Birdie, thank God. How's your baby?
She's 27. Her baby's doing well. She's started preschool.
Never mind. I don't want to know. I don't know why I asked. Actually, you're 5, 6, 7. That's what I'm going to call you all from now on. It's just easier.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington. And today we're here to talk about 2019's Late Night, a movie that you can watch right now on Amazon Prime.
That's because... right. Pause this podcast and watch it, and then come back and unpause it.
And then come back. So it's a movie that came out this year, but you can see it already if you have an Amazon Prime account for the cost of your Amazon Prime account.
Mm-hmm. Or the password of your friend or family's Amazon
yes.
Prime account.
Exactly. Aislinn, when did you first become aware of and then see the movie Late Night?
Goodness, I must have become aware of it in trailer form. Sometimes when I get a lunch break, on my lunch break, I watch a couple trailers. And
sure.
So I believe I saw it there. And at that moment, I was unclear whether it was a theatrical or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it popped up on my Prime, I watched it. So probably like a month ago, I watched it the first time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, you know, this is a double up. How about you, Tope?
I became aware of it as somewhere in the sort of as it was being produced, I was aware of it. I tend to keep tabs on all things that Emma Thompson does. And so I was excited that she and Mindy Kaling were working together.
Yes.
And then I read about it a lot at Sundance. We'll get to that in a minute. But it was a big Sundance movie last year. And then I didn't see it until it sort of came and went in the theater in the blink of an eye. And then so I just watched it this week for the first time. But it's one that has been on my radar for a while, and I was glad to finally get a chance to see it.
Absolutely. Speaking of this movie, could you tell us a little more? Could you tell us your two bits of film history for this movie, please?
I can certainly try. The first bit is that Mindy Kaling, who wrote and co-starred and produced this movie, she was the one who apparently, if the press reports are true, got to kind of choose the director. And she decided to hire Nisha Ganatra, who is a director who's done a lot of TV. I mean, TV, both British and American TV back for a long time. Like she's done, if you've seen a show
right.
that's like vaguely funny mm-hmm. and or vaguely dramatic, she has directed an episode or two of it somewhere along the way.
Gotcha.
And she directed some of the Mindy Project. The reason that she got the job was she shared this slideshow with Mindy Kaling about the like how her life mirrored the life of the main character.
Oh, interesting.
In the movie about
okay.
Molly. So she sort of demonstrated a personal connection and in that way landed the gig, which I thought was pretty cool. The other bit of business film history, which gets a little bit into, I think, my overall issues with
sure.
the movie. That's not quite the right way to say it, but is the fact that, so it went to Sundance and it got this rapturous kind of response at Sundance in terms of people wanting to buy it a lot. So when there's a film festival, there are movies that don't have distribution, that don't have a company that's already going to put it into movie theaters or put it on Netflix or whatever. They don't have distribution yet. They at a film festival, they sort of have bidding wars, or they basically are auctioning off the rights. If it's a popular movie to whoever wants to be the ones to put it out into theaters or onto their streaming platforms. And it was a huge $13 million is what this movie sold for at Sundance, which is a huge amount for a buy at Sundance. And so and Amazon bought the movie, and there was some controversy at the time about were they going to release it theatrically, and you know, all these kinds of questions.
Sure.
But the movie was got a lot of attention. They were talking Oscars. They were talking, oh, Amazon must think this is going to be a huge hit. You know, they all want it to be Little Miss Sunshine, which is sort of the most recent example of a movie that was bought for about that amount of money that then made like $150 million or whatever. And so it was a big deal that the movie sold, and I think for that much. And then I think that tarnished its reputation going forward. But we'll get into that as we go.
Interesting. Intrigue. That's like a little, not a spoiler, but a little preview of what's to come.
Teaser.
That's the word I wanted.
Aislinn, would you please take us through the ladies in charge? Who were the women involved in major roles? I'm just wondering, were there any women involved in major roles in Late Night?
Well, Tobin, take a seat. Get comfy, because there were a lot of awesome women in charge, both in front of and behind the camera. And nice. So here we go. Starting with, as we do, actors, Mindy Kaling, Emma Thompson, and Amy Ryan. Director, Nisha Ganatra. Writer, Mindy Kaling. Producers, Jillian Applebaum, Allison Cohen, Erica Hampson, Mindy Kaling, and Heather Morris. Editor, you know I love an editor.
I do.
Eleanor Infante. Music, Leslie Barber. Casting, Mary Beth Fox. Production design, Elizabeth J. Jones. Art direction, Starlett Jacobs. Set decoration, Henriette Vittadini. And you can take that little pause out between Henriette and Vittadini. Thank you.
That is a lot of women in major roles in this movie.
A lot of women in major roles.
Yeah.
Amazing. I think arguably our most, although I haven't combed through all the credits to see, I guess I would assume if you included art direction and design and stuff here, you would have looked through it all the way every movie.
We had a review, which I shouldn't read. I shouldn't read the reviews. We had a three-star review.
We should listen to all of our fans.
You're right. But just for my own sanity, sometimes the online comment sections can be rough. We had a review that talked about that sort of requested that we include more of these other roles.
I agree.
And so I had originally, but the idea was to cut down on time a little bit. But you know what? What else is this podcast for? No one has got a time crunch on it. If anything, people want our show to be longer. No, I don't know.
Say their names. That's what I have to say.
We say their names, and I do think this is an interesting thing with this movie. Is the creators of the movie were sort of very vocal and conscious about having a lot of women behind the scenes in this movie, and so I think that also is an impetus for this new chapter in our dinging a lot of the people behind the scenes.
Absolutely, I think you hear a little bit more of that than you used to in terms of I think what's wonderful is it seems in my anecdotal evidence. When a woman finds herself in that position to have some control over that mm-hmm. that's more often when we see a loud call for parity in various departments, not just, you know, where we will see it or where the names will appear large on the poster. So I applaud it.
Right. Excellent.
Okay. What is this movie about in case someone doesn't have access to Amazon Prime?
And again, if you haven't watched it, go pause us and go check it out.
No reason not to.
Tonight with Catherine Newberry, or Newberry, TV's only female-hosted late-night talk show has gotten stale. Its prickly star, played by the brilliant Emma Thompson, can't even be bothered to learn the names of her writing staff. In walks the show's first ever female writer, Molly Patel, played by Mindy Kaling, whose earnestness, tenacity, and talent eventually shake Catherine out of her funk and challenge her to rise to her potential, beating back attempts by the new network president, played by Amy Ryan, to take the show away from her. In the end, each of the women at the center of the story must learn to own their power and embrace their missteps in order to change the face of late night forever.
Mm. Interesting.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, let's begin with Emma Thompson.
I suppose we should.
Shall we? We will likely end with her as well. Tobin,
I will.
You've been a fan. And I think fan is it's not a good enough word in this case, but I think you mm-hmm. have been in admiration of and in and a fan of and mm-hmm. many other things of Emma Thompson mm-hmm. for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, for as long as I can remember. since I got into movies, really.
Yeah, I think I know of her because of you. My first, the first thing I can think of is Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes.
Which I would say still holds up.
Mm-hmm.
But so tell me, in your really on this topic expert opinion, tell me a little bit about how you found Emma in this role.
I think Emma is so good in this movie. I think that she and we know already that I have a thing for like middle-aged domineering women, I think is how you've said it in the past.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a really fun role for Emma to get to play because she is somewhat playing on her own persona a bit, and yet in terms of, you know, she has won Oscars for writing comedy, she's won Oscars for playing drama, she was started out in sketch comedy in her earliest days, she had a one woman like variety sketch show on BBC when she was very first starting out.
Amazing.
So she has kind of done this in a way. It wasn't a talk show, but it was called Emma. And so she brings, if you are as steeped in Emma Thompson history as I am, you bring a lot of those kinds of associations to this movie. But I think for my money, there were times in this movie where I think I texted you as I finished the movie, like I didn't cry, I didn't fully cry, but I had to blow my nose and there were times I got misty and it almost always was about Emma Thompson's character mm-hmm. and something that she was sort of going through. And she brings a regalness to this part that I think it demands, but also she's really good at the biting, cutting mm-hmm. Stuff. That was my impression. What did you think of Emma Thompson in this movie?
I thought she was great. I thought after this, I really wanted her show to be real.
Uh-huh.
because I would love to hear, because as much as it is a character, like you say, she's really good at the biting and she's quick and clearly she has that skill set. It comes natural, you know, not naturally as she worked very hard at it, but you know, now it is second nature.
Right.
And I thought that our friends in the various departments, mm-hmm. I'm looking at art direction, it's that decoration. I don't know if that's true. But in terms of how she has looked, that's not the word I wanted, mm-hmm. but like how she created a late night persona that was still like familiar to what a late night host would wear and would look like. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I thought that was done really mm-hmm. nicely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's mean and dismissive.
Yeah.
and of course she can't remember the writers' names. They all are the same. Although within
is part of the point in some degree, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Within that stack though of the writing staff were a couple of my favorites. Reed Scott Ooh. From Veep, of course.
Yes, of course.
John Early, who has, speaking of one person shows, but also on Search Party, I think is where a lot of people would know him from.
Oh,
is
yeah.
great.
Sure, sure.
Hugh Dancy, I've been watching almost as long as you've been watching Emma Thompson.
Yeah, right, right.
So he's great there. And then, I guess that the other men were not in the room. Now is not the time for them. But in any case, I thought she was great.
I'd also like to, since we're shouting out the men in the room, mm-hmm. to talk about Dennis O'Hare just a little bit, who plays her like assistant or producer or whatever, who's another actor that I've loved for a long time. I've seen him on stage in New York. I've you've seen him in. There's a scene from the movie Michael Clayton that I show every semester to my students. I'm going to show it next week in a class that he's in, and he's so good in the scene. He's one of my faves. So I think none of them have the movie does not depend on the arc of their characters, mm-mm, which is really nice. Yeah, it doesn't absolutely have to, you know? And so they get to kind of have their own little, you know, a little bit of backstory or something. And they do that just fine.
Yeah. As we get into the writing room, can I make like an overarching comment?
Please.
I think that, so in this movie they have a lot of discussions about, privilege and things that are earned versus things that are handed out, and gender as well as race, and how all of that intersects, if you will, intersectionality, mm-hmm, being an important concept. And yeah, as I was watching this movie, I had thought to myself three things. One, I don't know if they're like, in quotes, getting it right in all of this. Mm-hmm. But secondly, it's certainly not for me to say, you know, it's not up, mm-hmm, to me whether or not they're getting it right. And third, I'm glad they're having the conversation. I'm glad I'm watching them have the conversation, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, regardless of how well I thought it played out as, mm-hmm, part of a plot or while the plot occurs in this movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's my overarching comment.
Yeah, I think I that sounds like my experience as well.
Okay. Great.
I concur.
Right. So with that in mind, we've got this very white male writing room, and like, yes, you said, a very stale show. Mm-hmm. And in a last ditch effort to probably avoid a lawsuit of some kind and maybe save the show, but at least save face.
Right.
As the show closes, we get Mindy Kaling walking, mm-hmm, through the door, being Mindy Kaling, mm-hmm, which I love. I got no problems with that. I think just as the director, you said, demonstrated why there were similarities, I think there are certainly some parallels, as I understand it, to Mindy's story. Sure. I have read both her books. Just, yes, full disclosure. And I have watched her sort of through interviews and talking points and things, as a curvy lady myself who sometimes is funny. I appreciate a lot of where she's coming from. Although again, mm-hmm, I'm not going to compare my journey to hers. It's
sure,
different.
Sure. Yeah.
But I've always liked that she's doing what she's doing, even if I don't always enjoy the product entirely. But yeah, so she's bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, not had a lot of experience in TV.
None in TV, very None little in TV. Comedy.
But they need a woman, ideally a woman of color, and there she is.
Right. And is hired because in the interview, mm-hmm, as Dennis O'Hare is reading her resume and finding out that she's sitting in front of him because she wrote an essay
contest at like her job, that
which was
her chemical company also like the big owner also owns the studio.
Owns the company that owns the network. Right. He says, "You're our parents' parent company." Mm-hmm. And he gets a call in the middle of that thing with Emma Thompson saying, "Just hire a woman." and so he does, which is, you know, they're the people who I think reacted lukewarmly to this movie. And I don't want to say everybody, but some of the reviews that came out as the movie came out felt like it was a little paint by numbers in some ways. Like it felt like a sort of the its heart was in the right place. The themes were good, but maybe things were happened sometimes a little too easily or a little too predictably. And I think that they were expecting a movie I think respecting a different movie.
Sure.
Since they were talking about this as like, as I say, an Oscar contender and it's like going to make a bunch of money. And I think if it didn't have those expectations, people wouldn't be looking for places to like, because I feel like people a little bit wanted to like pop its bubble as it came out, if that makes sense.
Sure. Like, oh, absolutely. I think that's part of a cultural trend at the moment.
Totally. Totally. But I do think this moment is one place where it feels like maybe that's just the fact that Emma Thompson calls in that moment. Catherine calls in that moment. Does feel a little convenient, in a way that maybe, could be more rigorous in a different movie. But those moments to me were sort of pretty few and far between. But that one is one that did stand out for me to think, oh, maybe this is why some people kind of ejected from the movie a little bit.
Gotcha. I guess my familiarity with Mindy products.
Yeah.
There's a little bit, I guess I saw it as those moments landed for me as kind of an attempt at charm or it's a little bit, I don't want to say slapsticky, but when you think about like her first big break was this two-woman show that she did with her roommate called Matt and Ben, where they were pretending they were Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, like on the phone with each other, or I didn't see it. I don't know.
I think they're writing Good Will Hunting, aren't they? Or something.
Gotcha. For some of it, I guess I expect a little bit of magic in Mindyland. But you're right. I mean, sure. I thought this movie zagged a little bit when I thought it was going to zig.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Can you think of an example?
Yes, I can. I didn't expect the thing that to bring the show down would be the revelation of Emma Thompson having an affair with one of her young writers.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that was tough, not because I was upset she had the affair, because I like, get yours, go get it. but that, like, of course, I guess I was just heartbroken when that happened. Cause like, of course that is going to like in my mind, well, we're not coming back from this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I expected the all's lost to be different. And so that was interesting to me. And then, I mean, anytime John Lithgow is in the room, I'm happy also.
Of course.
And
of course.
So the depth we got with that part of the plot was unexpected to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to poke holes, but, so I won't. End of comment.
I think that the thing that probably got to people a little bit is that the movie is as earnest as Mindy Kaling's character is in a lot of ways. I don't think that's a pejorative thing. I think that's a tonal choice of the movie. Like there's so the John Lithgow character who plays the Kevin Newberry's husband is going through he's suffering from Parkinson's disease. And there's one scene near the end where he's sitting watching TV and just out of focus behind him is a wheelchair, right? Like it's wearing all this stuff on its sleeve right up front. Like it's not being coy with any of the plot machinations or the characters. And I think for some people that makes some critics uncomfortable. I think that there's a certain amount of critical reception that they need a little distance, some ironic distance. And this movie does not have ironic distance, which is also maybe why it played so well at Sundance with a bunch of movies that are heavily ironic. And then this movie comes along and it's a breath of fresh air too, right? But I think if you key into that, if you realize that what you're watching is a movie that is unironic, that doesn't mean it's not smart. It's just like its tone is just one of this is what this is, and we're playing with conviction, then I think you'll have a much easier time watching it.
Conviction, I think, is a great word for a lot of people and points in this, right? I mean, both of these. Mm-hmm. So throughout the movie, at many points, Emma and Mindy's characters are at odds in some way. Or in some ways. And I think what they have in common, one is they love TV. but is their conviction, I think, is something that they they share. And it also, I think, something that Reed Scott's character shares and is also at odds with Mindy. And I think it, that's a, I, again, when I say that, you know, some of the, you know, politically charged parts, I don't know how, you know, this is one set of conversations and shouldn't right. be seen as like the end all of anything. But, right. But I like to see them go back and forth and break down some assumptions they had about each other. You know, early mm-hmm. on, there when there was a hole in the writer's room, Reed, I want to call him Scott Reed, and that's my problem. Reed Scott's brother, younger brother, was like assumed to take that position. Everyone right. assumed. And so I think seeing the writer's room and feeling that, then Mindy immediately believes she understands who they are as people.
Right. Right. Right.
And of course it is more complex than that. However, no one should assume like their ascendance in their career, but we know it happens. So mm-hmm. I liked their back and forth and their kind of conflict of conviction. I'm gonna say that again. Yeah. Their yeah. conflict of conviction as well.
Yeah. It's such a great point. And I think everybody in the movie, I shouldn't say everybody in the movie. A lot of these main characters, you can understand why they have the perspective that they do.
Yes.
And everybody gets a chance for their perspective to in some way have be validated a little bit. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, a lot.
Right.
and in some ways to be challenged a little bit or a lot, depending on where they need to move within the movie, right? Like depending on how far they have to go. And it's one of the things I like so much about the movie is that the Emma Thompson character who is not really the protagonist of the movie,
mm-hmm.
but she's the one that has to have the bit, like she really has to come to terms with reconciling who she is as a person off camera, who she is as a person on camera, and who she wants to be. How close can these two things be to one another? And, you know, there's and with mistakes that she has made and how to sort of move forward with those. And I think that she really wrestles with it. Like mm-hmm. she has a few scenes in this movie where she either is crying or almost crying. And you can sense the pain that she feels, that she has caused, that she recognizes that she has caused, that she's going to continue causing or not. And I think that the conviction, it's a great point, a great way to sort of say that is like she's got all this conviction that it's not always on, you know, like when right. we meet her at the beginning, she has like faux conviction
mm-hmm.
and then she has to like figure out how to get her conviction back or reorient it in the right way or something. And I think that that's a story that all of us could hear once in a while.
Sure. You know? Yeah. No, it feels in the beginning, she's very much on autopilot in some ways.
Right.
Can we talk about something that I just don't like in movies?
Yes.
So in my life, there are many, many awkward moments.
No.
And I like to talk when I'm talking to perhaps my students or other coworkers who are concerned about a quiet or awkward moment. I like tell them you milk that awkward moment, right? You sit in that uh-huh. awkward. I also uh-huh. loved to do that on dates. Like first or second dates, like when someone else makes it awkward, you just sit there and you just let it be awkward, right?
Yeah, sure.
And yet, so I'm good at that. It's a kind of my superpower. And my student got me a mug that said awkward is my specialty. But in movies.
Yeah.
Bad stand-up is just something that's tough for me to uh-huh. watch.
Uh-huh.
And she turns it around and that, but like, oh gosh, that's rough. And just as a convention, I have trouble with it.
And do you mean like deliberately bad or just like stand up that we're supposed to think is good that is bad within the world, like within
good
the movie?
Good point. Stand up that is received poorly.
Mm-hmm.
But often when it's from a character that we are meant to like and root for, because also me as an audience, I'm sorry, this segment is all about me. I'm a fantastic audience member. I have been asked to show up at live events specifically, like as an audience, mm-hmm. as a plant in the audience to get them going. I love live, whatever it is. So I think that's part of it too, is like, God, if I was in the audience, there would at least have one person laughing.
Yeah.
Although my, that wasn't funny face is pretty severe as well. but yeah, that's just, so that part of it. Well, I think this, tell me if I'm correct. This was a moment that was perhaps overly convenient where Mindy is fired from her job the one night she won't stay late to go host a charity comedy-a-thon.
Right.
And at first you believe she's fired, and then suddenly Catherine Newbery shows up and performs.
Right.
As a reconciliation. Am I correct that that was one of two magical moments?
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think that it's funny you say that. I feel I don't get asked in the same way to come be a plant in the audience, but I do have, when I'm watching live people, like watching stage things or whatever,
yeah.
I'm probably unnecessarily empathetic to the mm-hmm. people who are performing. And if it's not good, I can't even not show it on my face. Like I feel so bad, for them. Like I feel embarrassed for people.
Right.
Even if they don't know that they should be embarrassed. but that's really, really tough for me. It's interesting though, because I think that.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you a question as someone who has children.
Yeah.
Is that true for children's performances as well?
Not my own children.
Of course. But I think you and I have both sat through.
Yes.
Some. How about this? Intermediate contemporary yes. dance where
sure.
we're not like adorable babies. And by babies, I mean like 5-year-olds.
Right.
We're yep. not skilled high school students. We're tweens that may or may not have rhythm. We're so terrible people. So I just imagine you as someone with kids who are in many activities.
Yes.
Like you might have to watch your face and then for the next
sure.
10 years
I'm really working on it. I wonder, you know, the person that I think of as being the other person who's great in an audience is mm-hmm. our mom.
Oh my gosh. So good.
If you're, cause we both did a lot of stage stuff when we were kids, and she's an easy laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And a recognizable laugh and will often be the only, not will be the first one laughing,
yep.
like seeing where the joke's going and is like pre-laughing. And,
and in children's theater, that's not hard to do.
No, that's true. But I have such fond memories mm-hmm. of mama's pre-laughs at our show. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, apparently, in your audience going.
That is my favorite of all the times you've told me I'm turning into mom. You can cut that if you want. Yeah, no, she's a fantastic audience member. I'm proud to be in her, incorporated in her image. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about another man. Rarely say that.
Okay. Uh-oh. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. So, well, I guess, should we talk about Amy Ryan first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about Amy Ryan. So I love Amy okay. Ryan as a
love
person.
Amy Ryan.
I think as an actor, yep. she's fantastic in that yep. she can be, well, she's just a good actor, meaning that I'm on her side or I'm upset with her, depending on what she's playing. I don't need to explain what acting is.
Right.
She's good at it. I like her.
She's good at it. Yeah.
So she's a bit of a nemesis-ish, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. as in behind the scenes media things are. Often there's a studio head or someone from upstairs or a suit or something.
Right. She is the suit in this
movie. She is yeah. the suit. And we don't see a lot of her, but like her presence in the – it feels like there's a countdown clock on, right, the
right.
whole time for
right.
their little show. How did you – find Amy in this role?
You know, this is a role that feels like if it was so in 9 or 8 out of 10 movies of this kind, it'd be a guy in this role
sure.
because that's the way movies are.
And that's the way studios are.
And I was going to say that, right? And the way that networks and studios are. And I think that you know, so part of the charm of this part, or charm's not the right word, but part of the it's smart to have Amy Ryan be in this movie because there are a lot more. There are more women making decisions about what gets made, especially on these new streaming services and what gets bought. So, like, that feels both realistic and you know, good for the movie, and helps shade the part a little bit. It mm-hmm. be, you know, something a little bit different than we've seen. It also allows Amy Ryan and Emma Thompson's characters to have these. They have like two or three battle-y scenes, like scenes where they're very acrimonious toward one another. And they're both, as you've talked about, they both feel a lot of conviction in the things that they're in their point of view, and their points of view clash. Mm-hmm. And I think that it adds a whole other layer to have another woman in that scene who has sort of climbed whatever corporate ladder she has climbed to get where she is. I think that's an interesting dynamic. There's not much to the part.
No,
you know, like, it's a little bit of a waste of Amy Ryan in that Amy Ryan has done, you know, is capable of doing more on screen, mm-hmm. but that's okay. Sometimes you only need somebody to come in and kind of play the heavy in the yeah. movie. And it was probably also fun for Amy Ryan to come in and like play these scenes opposite Emma Thompson, where they're both like, you know, brawling.
Sure.
But the parts part of me says, oh, but I'd like to see more of her. And, mm-hmm. you know, so anyway, that was my feeling. What'd you think about Amy Ryan?
This was one, and maybe this is a naive zag for me because I make things up sometimes. I sort of thought the reveal at some point would be that she had been a huge fan.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah,
she's,
sure.
She's certainly older, you know, or further along in her career than Mindy, but seems a bit younger than Emma Thompson. So
right.
I thought, I guess my, what I th- the cliche I thought they were going to have would be like some yeah. sort of like sisters moment.
Uh-huh.
Like, hey,
uh-huh.
hey, sister. But I think you're right. It's a tough part because there's not a lot to it in a different way, but also a similar way to how uh-huh. the writers are inconsequential. These extra dudes.
Right.
You
right.
know,
exactly. Yeah.
But I'm so glad they had someone like Amy Ryan that has such presence, like you say, to play off of Emma Thompson, and just the, you know, the little office reunion of Mindy and Amy.
Yes.
So we talked about Amy Ryan in order to say that the studio has decided they're going to replace the host.
Right.
And they're going to replace yes. the host with this super bro-y comedian, which right. in my brain,
yes,
he was doing an impression of Dane Cook.
Oh, I totally thought that. I totally had that thought.
Or that type. And I shouldn't right. blame it all on Dane Cook, having been, I am in recovery from being a fan.
Yes, you are.
And have been for a long time in recovery. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think I have my 10-year chip. But that ilk, there was, so that was a comedian for the young people or the old people. I don't know. Comedian that got super hot in the early 2000s. And was everywhere in arena tours and blah, blah, blah. And so then there's a bunch of others. So it's not necessarily him, but it's that type that's super mm-hmm. bro-y, and that's enough. Super bro-y. Ike Barinholtz, who for me can be off-putting generally,
mm-hmm.
although I did love him in Sisters, speaking of Sisters. Mm-hmm. God, he played it so well.
Yeah.
He was perfect. And I think, knowing the little I know about him as a person, he's not a super bro-y person, but he happens to be a tall, big white dude in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think he understands that culture. And he was just the perfect nemesis, I think. Mm-hmm. That's not mm-hmm. a question. did you enjoy his portrayal?
I did, and I was so worried.
Okay, tell
every
me.
Every time he was on screen, because I have some of the same feelings, you know, about like I'm he works for me sometimes. He doesn't work for me other times, mm-hmm. you know? But it made me really worried for what was going to happen to Emma Thompson's character. Is she going to have to give her show
right.
to this guy? So and there's a version of this movie that would still be the, you know, still be, have all of its other trappings where she does have to in the end,
right. or,
you know, and it would be that kind of bittersweet sort of thing. Like, we lost this one, but Mindy's going to go start her own show or whatever. Like, there's another, you know, and I so didn't want that to happen in this movie. And I think that he was sufficiently terrifying
yes.
as a possible. And then also, as you say, played it so well, like when he came on her, so he comes on her show part through this movie where she's supposed to pass the torch on camera. She's supposed mm-hmm. to say, and guess what? I'm going to give you my show. And he's playing that sort of faux graciousness mm-hmm. to her that we know is not true, is that that he's putting this on, and so does she. And he plays that really, like, if you only saw that clip, the first part of that clip, you might believe he was telling the truth, right?
Sure.
Like, he doesn't telegraph that he really is a, you know, an asshole. So I thought he did that well. Yeah, I was really worried.
Yeah. And they have two, is it just that one, or is he on the show twice?
I feel like he's on the show twice, but I can't remember. Or he comes to visit the show, right? Doesn't he come to see? He's there with the manager guy, right? Isn't he? I can't remember.
Sorry. Why can't we remember? We just watched this movie. But in the – so, okay, let's talk about her and her guests on the show.
Okay.
So
yes.
Early on, they're trying to figure out – before they get this new flavor for her, she's still – out of touch and whatever. And so they're trying to book young hot social media stars
right.
to get the audience there. And she has this young woman on that she doesn't know, you know, and,
it was a YouTube star, right?
Yeah. YouTube, Vine. I don't even know. And their exchange, speaking of awkward, just gets worse and worse. But the guest sort of calls her on it in a way that I was surprised
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I thought was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that too?
Yeah. You mean in the way that she's, again, her point of view also feels legitimate in that moment?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that is what I mean. Thank you
yeah.
for translating yeah. Iceland. That I was empathetic to this little starlet that I hadn't anticipated being, because, like, I'm going to be on Emma Thompson's side because right. she's a boss.
Right.
But then it was like, and I love that when I am challenged in my own, you know, understanding of the character.
I think that this gets to, you know, not to say that all men make one kind of movie and all women make another kind of movie, but there does seem to be a bit of a common theme in a lot of the movies that we've covered that have been directed or written by women, that there is there seems to be more interest in a variety of points of view being correct.
Mm, now, that's a great way to say that.
Maybe that's overly broad and, you know, like, but in general, I think that there's something to that, at least in this movie, that mm-hmm. I think that there's something to that, that it's not even that there's just two points of view that feel like that there's validity to, but there are multiple points of view that have validity.
Absolutely. That's perfect. Thank you. And so we go from that exchange to I don't even remember his name, Ike Barinholtz on the show, and
yeah.
the faux graciousness. And then he makes some comment about, like, oh, you shouldn't leave or all that. And so she basically says on camera, okay, let me keep my show then. Give me back my show.
I'll stay. Yeah.
Yeah. It was that awkward. I loved.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know anything about much. What would be the consequence of that kind of thing if there were, like, network papers signed and stuff?
Yeah, it's this is where the, you know, how far magic. You want to go down the logic, you know.
Sure.
And I I find that tiresome. Critiques, you know, like in a movie, you take the movie on its own terms, and in this movie, they're not going to get into the weeds on that. The Sorkin movie would. This movie's not going to, you know.
Yeah,
I think there would be more consequences than there are, but there is something to her as Emma Thompson says, Catherine sort of figures out how to reaccess and wield her power for good. She's coming back into her power in this one of the places that she lays that trap for him to do that. And I think they do a nice job of Mindy Kaling's character of Molly, kind of, you know, of her, Molly's objections to this plan, planting the seed for her. But you don't see the thing where they hatch the plan together. You know, it's not not that cutesy. It's just she has expressed her conviction. You should not give the show up. It's your show. This is not right. And it's a betrayal of who you are. And then turns around and walks off into the closet or wherever. Right? And so she just plants the seed. And then Emma Thompson's character sort of leaps from that to this this thing that she does. That, yes. If the,
right. Because that's a surprise to us. Right.
We don't know that she's been right.
Yeah, the last comments Emma Thompson makes are "Leave me alone, I got to prepare for my show," and that script was for her to pass the torch. So from an audience perspective, we didn't know that Mom Molly was successful in her plea.
Right. In the same way that it sort of sets us up for the end of the movie, where Emma Thompson comes out after having the show go dark for a week or two after these the scandal has hit the press. And then she comes out and we don't know or aren't sure. Is she going to give up the show or not? Like, she has another moment of an on camera decision about deciding what to do with her career and life and power and all that. So there's a little bit of like a setup payoff to that, too.
Yeah. That was a great moment. In between those moments, I want to talk briefly about the exchange and conversation that they had in her. Gosh, is it her office?
Where she has all the Emmys.
Drinking, yeah, and they have the Emmys.
And I think that, so. Yeah, or like her study at her house or something like that. Yeah,
I couldn't remember if it was at her house or not. Because they go to her house for a party, and that's where we learn that. Or it is alluded to that she and Hugh Dancy had some sort of past.
Because who wouldn't?
Amen. In either case, by the way.
Right, exactly.
That's a party I'd RSVP to. Because Mindy and Hugh have a thing, which is predictable, but also I love when she does the thing that happens in movies when – often the woman, but someone shows up unexpectedly with someone they think they have some amount of monogamy with, and there's someone else there and they're half dressed or whatever. And it was that, and I've seen that before, but her reaction to it, I think, was a little bit different, just in that, like, oh God, of course. Yeah. Of course this is what this is. I get it now.
Clearly now. Yeah. Yeah.
I was behind. I'm with you now. Okay. We know who each other is. Right. Like, you have shown me who you are. I'm going to go home and eat my cupcakes. And, and that I really liked. But in the study, they're, drinking and looking at the Emmys, and that's when some more of that, I don't know, affirmative action-y conversation happens. And she, Molly says something to the effect of, well, I don't want people to think of me as just the diversity hire. And Emma Thompson's like, yeah, but you are. And then, but it's what you do with it kind of thing. What was your, did you like that conversation? Did you think that was not, I don't mean real, but like, I don't know. I liked your thought that there's more than one correct point of view displayed here. Yeah. And because I didn't agree with everything that Emma Thompson said.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm making statements and asking you to react to me, and I apologize for that.
It's okay. Because I think, and we hadn't talked before we'd seen the movie, since we'd seen the movie. So I think we're on very much the same page on this stuff, that it's everybody in that scene has something to say that is true, and everybody has things to say that maybe is not true. And it is, there is something that it feels like everybody needs to hear these other points of view, right?
So
Mindy needs to hear in that moment. Yeah, like, you're hired because I yelled at my producer, we need to hire a woman, and you were sitting in the office, right?
Yeah.
Now, the counter to that is all the things that Mindy Kaling did to get into that office, right? Which is overcoming all the things to be the diversity hire, quote unquote, right? So everybody's got, you know, it's all true and it's messy and like, and they have these different points of view that I think are valid, but I think it's important. It feels important to Molly's journey in the movie to recognize that part of why she's in the room is that reason. And then like now, and so what? Like Catherine seems to kind of be saying like, and,
right.
You know, and what's interesting is that the end of the movie, again, I keep jumping to the end, but
that's okay.
These things all end up being setups for the end of the movie where, you know, when Emma Thompson has this great, Mindy Kaling have this great scene where she's trying to convince Molly to come back and work for her again. And she has this one of Molly's, like, Molly doesn't argue about salary. Like she, you know, which one of her stipulations is we have to change who and how we hire. And you get a shot at the end of the movie where it's a much more inclusive workplace all around, like from the writers to the receptionists, to the assistants, to the coffee people. Like, and so you end up seeing, I feel like that step is important where Emma Thompson has said to her, no, you are like, part of this is you are a diversity hire, which is her step of like, okay, so this is part of what we have to do.
Right. It's right? What we do now. Yeah.
We give breaks to people.
And we bring folks up.
Right.
See, then that makes me like it. Like, I like that little pan around the room and there's more ideas and
and it's on the nose and it's not realistic and it's like, oh, I get it. You know, like, critics, I get it. Mm-hmm. But you know what? This, in the terms of this movie, the movie's been a fantasy from the beginning because there is no late night talk show host who's a woman. I mean, famously, what's her name?
Joan Rivers,
right, was like the traditional substitute for Johnny Carson. And then they had some kind of falling and she was going to take over for his show, right? Like she was going to have her own show or take over from whatever. And there was like, I can't remember from the documentary, but I remember it was a big point there. But like,
ooh, I lost you there.
You know, and there have been times, you know, am I back?
You're back. Sorry about that.
Hello.
Are you okay? You hear me? Okay.
And then... Yeah. And then, you know, Samantha Bee has a show.
There's Samantha Bee. I was talking about this earlier. Sorry.
Like, hooray. Like, we have, there is one.
Love but Samantha
like,
Bee.
There's no.
No.
We love Samantha Bee, but like, that's different than a weekly or than a nightly talk show.
Sure. And there have been others. So, Chelsea Handler, we're going to give some amount for Chelsea lately that was nightly. Or at least some week nightly on E. And then Busy Tonight is the most recent.
Okay. Yep.
One to Fall was also on E. That was unfortunately not picked up.
Right.
And then in the news recently is, I'm not going to say the last name right, but Lily Singh is the first queer woman of color to get a late night show on a major network and also one of the youngest.
What network?
NBC.
You know?
NBC.
Oh, really? Okay, so that then will be the first because these other people that we're talking about are all on cable.
I see. Network.
Which is what this show, like network traditionally goes out to, you know, like 10 times the number of like viewers that cable shows do. And so cable has always felt like the kind of beachhead to get to, you know, like to be on network. But I think what we're meant to believe is that Catherine Newbery is a Jay Leno,
the Joan Rivers, of
Conan O'Brien
today.
You know, I can't think of.
You know, it's funny that you're naming them, Tobin.
Why? Oh man. Okay. Why is it funny, Aislinn, that I'm naming them?
Well, I have a game.
I'm so excited.
I know that we're still talking. Maybe in our final closing thoughts, we can add more thoughts, but you just really walked me right to the precipice here. So, Tobin, this game is called Which Jackass?
Okay.
It is a game of Jimmies.
Oh, man. Okay.
Currently on, late night or late night. It was not time prohibitive here. We've got Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, and James Corden.
Okay, right. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Three white dudes doing their thing. Now, the only reason I don't include the others is because of the silly naming convention of this is all Jimmy's.
Yes, yes.
And that one time that mom would try to DVR Jimmy Fallon and accidentally DVR Jimmy Kimmel and was really upset about it.
Okay.
All right. So I will ask you a fact. I will give you a fact and ask you which Jimmy does it correspond to.
Okay. Okay.
So, and this is all super fact checked from Wikipedia, people. Okay. So don't worry about it. Okay. Which jackass was born in 1978? A fine year.
A fine year. I'm going to say, Jimmy Kimmel.
Incorrect.
Oh!
James Corden.
Oh, okay. That was my second guess.
Which jackass is the oldest?
Okay, so Jimmy Kimmel is the oldest.
Yes. Yes. That's why I didn't say when you said James Corden that Jimmy Kimmel is 51.
Oh, wow. Okay. I always assume that I am like the oldest one is my age because I'm feeling old.
Oh, that's nice. So, not so. I haven't gotten quite there yet. Okay. Which jackass left college one semester shy of graduating?
Jimmy Fallon.
Very true. That's two for Tobin. Jimmy Kimmel also had some partial attendance and then has an honorary degree. In 2013, and I could not find information on James Corden, but he was doing stage work very, very young. So I imagine his college was the West End
was
or
the
something.
Boards.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Speaking of acclaim, which jackass won a Critics' Choice Award in 2018?
A Critics' Choice Award.
Indeed.
In 2018. So it's not Jimmy Fallon. I'm going to say a Critics' Choice Award in 2018. Okay, I'm going to say Jimmy Kimmel.
Correct.
I think the reason – so let me tell you how I got there.
Happy to.
The stuff about his son and the Affordable Care Act is my guess.
And vaccination. There was some great, he had doctors. He did this whole thing with doctors where they all looked straight to camera and said why they were annoyed by anti-vaxxers.
Oh, I like him even more now.
Yeah. He just be like, somebody was like, I still don't know how Lost ended because I'm talking to you people. It's very funny.
That's good. Okay.
That you can cut out too.
Okay.
Okay. All three Jimmys are married. Who has been married longest to their current spouse?
Ooh. Okay. I'm going to say James Corden.
Incorrect.
Oh,
Jimmy
man.
Fallon.
Really?
Yeah. He married in 2007.
Oh, okay.
Nancy. Juvenin?
Yeah, right.
Producing partner with... Drew Barrymore.
Of course. Right. I knew we talked about her. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The other two were in the early 2010s. Okay. Do you want to guess which Jimmy has the most children?
Jimmy Fallon.
No, Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, really? Oh, jeez.
He's got two sets.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here we go. Which Jimmy wrote a book in 2011?
2011.
Mm-hmm.
James Corden.
Correct. Nice job. It's something like, may I have your attention, please, or something like that.
That sounds right.
Which Jimmy was born in Brooklyn, New York?
Jimmy Kimmel. No.
Trick question. It was both Kimmel and Fallon.
And Fallon. Oh, man.
But I'll
man.
Give you a point because you didn't say James Corden.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't say the Brit. Okay. Yeah.
Tobin, your total is 5, but we have a final bonus question that can allow you to double your points if you're willing to take the chance.
I'm willing.
Which Jimmy did Aislinn used to think was very cute but is now dead to her?
Jimmy Fallon.
Indeed. Tobin, you won with an amazing 10 points.
Oh, that feels good.
It's super amazing.
I like that game.
Because there were only 8 questions. Nice job. Thank you so much for playing, Tobin.
Thank you for putting together another wonderful game.
I wonder how many points our listeners got.
Please tweet at us or tell us next time you're talking to us how many points you got in our game.
Fabulous.
Now is the time in our podcast where we sum up our thoughts and we decide, is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Aislinn, drum roll. What do you think?
We could base it entirely on the number of women that were in our ladies getting shit done segment. Mm-hmm. So for that alone, we could say progressive. Like you said, I think the way the story is told is indicative of a lot of female-led work. It's not a perfect movie. It's not my favorite movie, but I think it told an important story and had a lot of important conversations in it. And for that, I will say progressive. Tobin?
I completely agree. I think this movie is charming. It's a charming movie. It's a lovely, charming movie with some great performances in it and some funny bits. There's more to it than just what you saw in the trailer. If you saw the trailer, mm-hmm. Don't be put off by the reviews. I think that they were skewed by expectations of the movie. Take it on its own terms. And I think I will watch this again. And I've recommended it to at least one person since seeing it, finishing it this afternoon. And so I think that there, if you think the movie might be for you, it is.
Yes.
And I think that's all the reasons that you say I'm glad the movie was made and I will watch it again someday.
Sounds great. Thank you. Do you know what we're going to watch next, Tobin?
Oh, would you tell me? I'm excited.
I'd love to. We are going to get our buns all the way to a theater to watch the new Charlie's Angels reboot. Folks, it comes out 11/15. It comes out November 15th. this will allow us to revisit the wonderful talent that is Elizabeth Banks, an all-star on our podcast, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the podcast itself will come to you November 26th, just in time to put those headphones in at Thanksgiving in case, you know, someone throws turkey juice at you.
Yes, exactly. Drown out your relatives or home for the holidays, which may be playing on the TV, and listen to us instead. And this is, I would also note that this is the Elizabeth Banks is not only the director but also the writer of Charlie's Angels. Nice. So it's a more, perhaps a more pure vision than we even got in Pitch Perfect 2.
Amazing, Tobin. Where are you? Can we find you?
You know, you can find me. You can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, although I only have it on my computer, so I don't check it very often.
Oh, Grandpa.
I know. I had to take it off my phone because it's just too much. So you can still find me there, and you should come say hello. Aislinn, are you on Twitter at all, or where can people find you?
I mean, I technically am. I guess I just scroll until I get to the dog or otter posts that I'm following. Mm-hmm. So I don't find it as rage-inducing as you do. But that's just because I'm keeping myself naive in the Twitter sphere. I would like in the world. I know, yes, what's going on, but for Twitter, I just look at cute poppies.
Good for you.
But also, I just want to shout out quick, you can also find me on my other podcast, Why Aren't We All? There are 7 fun episodes of that on the Cage Club Network. And I'm a guest upcoming. Well, when does this come out? Tobin?
I'm looking. Hold on. This comes out the 29th of October.
Okay. So a fresh, hot episode of High School Slumber Party with Brian Rodriguez. I am a guest on the episode that just recently came out October 25th. Ooh. So if you want to hear me ruin Jennifer's body.
That sounds bad.
and give several small lecturettes.
Ooh, then, yay.
Not just to be clear, not at anyone.
Oh.
It was a damn delight to be on that podcast with Brian. So please check that out as well.
Can I say one other? I found one other note on the movie. Okay. Can I say one other thing?
Cohen is sneaking one in at the in between Iceland follows up and Iceland signs off. So yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Sorry. I knew this was my chance. I just saw in my notes that one thing I wanted to remember to say is there's a moment in the movie where Emma Thompson, she's having this heartfelt goodbye to all of her writing staff, and like one of them had died. She's like, what did he die of? And she's called them by their numbers the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And she goes around the tables, pausing at each person and saying your name, you know, Brian and Schmitty. And she gets all the way around the table and then gets to one and pauses, and says, six. And I just about died. I thought, oh my gosh. It just, the timing was great. It was, and you could kind of tell it was coming, and you, but oh man. So anyway, I just had to say that was my last note for the movie. Please continue.
It was a good, if you want to be tickled as much as Tobin just was, then please check out Late Night on Amazon. And if you want more of us, you can find us sort of on Twitter at contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. We want to give a special thanks to our members who've joined at the marquee level or above, the incomparable Sean Flynn and the majestic Jeff Addington.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me, and you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. As always, thank you so much for listening. I hope we have, what did she say at the end of the movie? I hope you have, I hope I've been worthy of your
earned,
time.
Yeah, I hope I've earned your
earned,
time. Or yeah,
worthy. Earned the something of your time. I should have looked it up before I did this. Damn. Anyway, thanks for listening to us. I am Tobin Addington.
I am Aislinn Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders. Off the record, while you were at the end of your first bit of history, I accidentally, yeah. Siri came on because of my headphones, and so I made a little noise.
Okay.
And so... that was not in reaction to you. So if there's a little oop in there, I apologize.
I will note that at the 7-minute mark.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.